Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back to the IVF Daddies podcast. My name is Julio.
And my name is Richard.
And where are we?
I feel like we're going to be interviewed by Oprah, actually. We are at a friend's house in Spain, which is amazing. Hence the outdoorsness of the podcast. Yeah, loving it.
That's amazing. And since I got here first, and we have been apart for a little bit, and you went to Berlin, and what did you have to go to Berlin for?
So I went to Berlin because there is a conference that is hosted by a not-for-profit organization called Men Having Babies. And what it is there's a group of professionals that are surrogacy agencies, lawyers, IVF clinics, who all go to this conference, and Men Having Babies advertise, and they get intended parents or people that want to learn about IVF and surrogacy to come. And that was in Berlin a couple of weeks ago. It was great.
And how do you get to be involved with Men Having Babies? Who are they, and how does that work?
So it's an organization that's been running for many years. To get involved, you sponsor a booth at the conference, and what the organizers do is they arrange for people to come so that you can talk to them about your specific company and how it works and what you're doing, and that's how you get involved.
And how do you feel the people that come to these conferences, and what stage of the IVF process do they see themselves?
That's a great question, because actually the people that come are a total mix. You have people that are total newbies. They thought they wanted a family. They saw the conference advertised and they turn up. And then you have people who've done a lot of research and they know what they're doing. And it's really interesting because the people that know what they want to do, they turn up, they've done their research, they know who they want to talk to, they have topics they want to discuss. And then you have the newbies, the people that think, this is what I want to do, and they turn up and they get completely overwhelmed. They are barraged with a whole bunch of information. It's like you sit in these lectures and they tell you about every step in the process and how it works. And by the end of the day, your brain's exploding.
And the best part is that it's not just one day.
No, it's two.
Again, and I will always say it, that's the main reason why I started the concept that we should do a podcast and make it more easy to understand. Because you've been working in the industry for how long?
10 years.
And you decided to go through IVF and surrogacy when?
Well, the twins are 11 and a half, so nearly 13 years ago now.
So I am dating somebody that has 11 and a half years old twins that's working in the field for 10 years. And I have been to all these conferences and I still don't understand how IVF and surrogacy from the beginning till the end works. And the minute that I go to these events is almost like day one is great. You get doctors, you have a lot of information and things that probably you didn't even know about it that comes to place of the pieces in the puzzle when it comes to having a baby, because I believe that there's no education on fertility. That, like, the podcast that we have done, I discovered what an andrology was when we did the andrology interview. So and I've been testing all my male friends.
All your male friends? I hope not.
No, asking them, do you know what an andrology is? And they are like, no, that's a neurologist. I'm like, no, an urologist is this and an andrology. And everybody's like, oh, I didn't know that existed. And then, so you go there, the first day, is the energy is really good. It's very welcoming. You also see people, because the most beautiful thing about this field is because it's a new, relatively new industry. So you see that they're scouting people that have gone through the process. It doesn't matter what your background and career is, other than the doctors and the lawyers. And then you see all these people that, like you, that you have gone through IVF, and you can only relate to people that have gone through the same thing. And then the first day is great. And then the second day, the energy, lawyers, contracts, insurance. I'm like, whoa, wait a second. Like, if I wanted to have a baby, I'm not ready, like, for contracts and paperwork and, like, what do you want to do if somebody wants to terminate the baby? What do you want to do if somebody, like, I'm like, oh, I'm not there yet. And what I've noticed from my perspective is that the people that are there, they're basically already clients. Like, there are people already that made their mind to take a flight, take a ticket, buy and travel. And there's a lot of people that go there. They wanted to protect their integrity. They wanted to protect their identity and not be revealed, because the concept of being infertile is not properly informed. And I believe that my goal is to understand. Like, sometimes you and I have conversations where you're like, oh, obviously this is the answers. But I'm like, you've been 10 years in the industry. So for me, all I'm doing is trying to educate myself to fundamentally be a better boyfriend for you and a better presence for your kids. So, and then we went to Taipei. And then I saw what you guys did and the way you presented it, and it was so harmonious. Like, you did an amazing panel, you guys did an amazing presentation, and then we had time to interview doctors, lawyers, insurance companies, surrogacy agency, and I learned every day, I learned more and more.
And I think a lot of the conversations that we have are where, in general, where you fill in the gaps. Because I've assumed that you've understood, or I've told you things. Why would you understand medical parts? But they assume you already know things. And a lot of the questions that we get, which are great, and please do keep sending in the questions, are people really trying to understand the basics of what am I supposed to do now? Not the, oh, I've already made the decision of doing this. This is what I'm going to do. And I think going to these conferences is wonderful. As you've pointed out, these are people that have already decided that they want to go through the family building through IVF and surrogacy. But what I'm seeing, and what has struck me, which I think is amazing from this podcast, is the need for people to understand the basics.
And to me, starting the conversation, whether it is good comments or bad comments, it allows us to to formulate a perspective and listen the people that are in need of more information, and the people that are in need to make the statement that they're strongly against this. Sadly enough, statistically, by numbers, the reproductive system of human is very inefficient out of all the living creatures on Earth. And one out of four or five people suffer from infertility issues. And then they go to the gynecologist or doctors and nobody tells them anything about fertility. And then the day that they want to have babies, suddenly they don't know, they can't do it, or they don't understand when is okay to say, oh, okay, natural process doesn't work. We have until a year or 6 months, and if not, we have another route.
Well, I think you touch on something very important. The reality is, this is niche. You don't know you need IVF or infertility treatment until you do. Most people, as you said, it's one out of six have some form of infertility. That means five out of six don't. What we're doing is we're trying to educate those people that can't. And for one reason or another, and to your point of many of my friends for many years were trying not to get pregnant, and then they did. But then there's that group of my friends who are like, well, actually, now I can't. And I think this is where conferences really do play an integral part of the process. The challenge with conferences is you've got 2 days to get across all the information, and it's
a lot
to take on board, especially if you're right at the beginning. And I see it. I see those people that I'm like, how are you doing?
But who's right at the beginning? Like, I see the most people that are right at the beginning are normally solo parents or gay couples that we've already experienced a lot of challenges in our lives. We have to come out of the closet. We have to fight rejection. We have to camouflage and to get into business careers that we have to portray certain characters or I'll call it drag. So you blend in. But you've already faced a lot of challenges in the way that you know that having a kid requires a team of work. But then when you have heterosexual couples that have tried and tried and tried, I don't think they're at the beginning. I think they're at the moment where they think their bodies are broken, they're failing, the marriage are taking a toll on. That is happening because of lack of information and taboo to talk about. Hey, do you want to go to the doctor and your insurance covers an egg count test, or you want to take your sperm at a certain age, or you graduated university, all my present for you is to freeze your eggs. You might never use it, but I want you to have your career. I don't want you to feel guilty because the minute that you went from a bad job to a better job to a great job, and then the minute you have the job of your life, people are like, oh, now you're married to corporate and now you have to have a baby. Nobody's going to marry somebody that busy. And it's almost like this like guilt pressure of the clock is ticking that I want somebody to say, I take the monkey off my shoulders and I have this heavy weight off my back and now I can just put that to bed and just go live my life, travel, work, and then when I want to have a family, I can opt for a natural way, and if it doesn't work, I know I'm not broken, I know I'm not a failure, and I know I have this alternative.
That was a statement, sorry, not a question, right? We've had this said before. It's like you've got to almost get to the point where you're grieving for the child you never had and you're going to celebrate the child you're going to have. And that's why these conferences and what we're doing helps, because a lot of people that we're speaking to are broken and they are sitting there going, I'm a failure and I can't do this. And then it's saying to them, well, you can't do this in on the road that you know, but there are other roads. And these are the roads, and this is how we're going to explain them to you and educate you on what paths you can take. And I think that, and I see this, thankfully, pretty much every day when somebody sends me a photograph of their new baby and they're like, oh my God, thank you so much. You were integral in helping to get to this point. So I think when I say they're at the beginning of their journey, it's different starting points, right? Gay guys are like, let's have a baby. Heterosexual couples are like, okay, well, we can't, and what are we going to do? And I think that's what I mean by being at the beginning of their journey.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you a question. So you've been working for this for 10 years, and you have done public speaking, and you have done panels, and you have done... What's the difference between doing what you do, and since we have 3 seasons of the podcast, what do you see is different from it?
That's a great question. I think what I see different now is that historically I've only really spoken to gay men wanting families. And now I'm seeing that the taboo around surrogacy, the destigmatization around infertility has meant that there are many, many more heterosexual people that I'm talking to. And I think it's wonderful to see because, you know, my children are now 11 and a half. They were very much at the forefront of being surrogacy families in the world. And everything I do is to make their life easier as where I can. And knowing that they're not alone in the world as children through surrogacy is amazing. And that to me has been a big change in what I see.
Every time, like every episode of the podcast opens a whole world of questions and realization that the blueprint that I thought the family was, every time I interview someone, the blueprint changes and changes and changes, from solo parenting to black maternity healthcare to transgender fertility. I learned a lot about what comes with just the human level, just the really extremely personal pieces of what it's like to create in your family. Also, the uncomfortable questions that you really have to face. Things that I never thought it was part of the process.
One thing that I find is that I get to know people on such a fundamental level because I'm talking to them in the rawest form possible. But it's like you are, well, when I'm sitting talking, I don't care who they are at the end of the day, and there are from VIPs down to my friends. The mechanics are what people need to understand. But what they need is they need someone next to them going, it's okay. We will get you there. And it may not be in the form that you thought it was going to be, but we will get you to having a family. And I think that is something that gets missed in translation a lot.
To me, it's really important to know who they are because the mechanics are the same, but who you are and the obstacles that you have faced in your life and the bumps in the road when they are higher and stronger and when you're a minority group and when you're not believed and when you're not, and when you're just tolerated and not privileged or accepted. I made a commitment years ago in New York to make a lot more emphasis and a lot more effort and fight a lot harder for those people. So to me, it's really important to make sure that who you are as a human is noticed. Then just finding the right people that will see you as you and say, oh, I understand what you're looking for and I can guide you and I can give you the right message is something that I learned on our last podcast with our guest, saying that for her it was important to be specific with her agency. And that just never crossed my mind. I thought all agencies are the same. And
right, but that, what I was saying, I think, was exactly what you've just said. That there are mechanics, and the mechanics will happen, but you need to understand, as me, as a person, I need to understand what the people are going through, where they've come from. But it's almost, that's on a personal level. From a mechanic perspective, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But from the personal level, you need affinity. You need a sense of belonging. You need a sense of community. You need to be able to be honest and open with the people you're dealing with. So when the highs are there, great. But when the lows are there, you can pick up the phone and say, hey, I need help. Or can we have a chat? Because people are very strange about asking for help sometimes. They'll pick up the phone and they'll be like, hey, can we have a chat? And then you have a 20-minute chat. And then at the end of it, you're like, anyway, this is why I wanted to talk. And that's an amazing thing to be able to do. But what we're doing, or what I hope we are doing, is we're taking a topic and bringing different angles to be able to, back to that point of affinity and belonging, show that whoever you are, there is a conversation to be had that will match your situation.
Yeah.
And I think that's, because for me specifically, like, I'm a gay man, I had families with an egg donor and a surrogate, and yeah, their people can relate to that if they're a gay man and they can understand that. But if you're a heterosexual couple using your own sperm and eggs, well, that's a different story.
Oh my God, when was the last time that you got a picture from your egg donor and you guys got in touch? And what's the situation on that? What's your structure on the relationship with your egg donor and your kids and you?
So about a month ago, I got a photograph of the egg donor with her husband and three children. Because once a year, I send her an email with a picture of the family and what the children have been doing. And then she replies. So we have communication once a year.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. But I've made a massive effort to educate everybody around us since the day they were born, that they have two dads, that they are loved. Because at the end of the day, children learn from their parents. And if children are fine with it, they're not going to try and pick holes in the story, or they're not going to try and bully the children about having two dads, because that's normal for them and that's what they see. And I think that's with any situation, because they're families come in all shapes and sizes. They come single parents, they come two parents, they come gay, they come straight, they come grandparents looking after children, adoption. Like, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter where the children come from. They're just loved.
Your daughter said that it's not like, if we have Taylor Swift in the family, she will feel complete.
That is also very true. Taylor Swift, if you're watching, I'm just saying, please come and say hi.
I will also feel complete if we have Taylor Swift in the family. Although we do have Taylor Swift in the house, in the family, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Okay, I wanted to touch on a personal topic that we've been getting on questions on DMs and through the podcast. The reality of having kids through IVF and divorcing, and then what happens, and then how does life have an impact on that? And now, almost 2 years later, having your kids saying that they feel like they have three dads, to me is the most amazing feeling in the world. And I can never say that those kids are not my kids. But you do have embryos.
I do.
And I remember seeing on the table not long ago a letter, a legal form of letter regarding the embryos. Can you explain to me a little bit about it?
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Sorry.
What's going through your mind right now?
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. This is a safe space for you too.
No, I know, but it's a question. It's a tough question because you.
I can't move on. I need to know what's on your mind, because if you feel like this, what's causing this?
Well, you don't. You don't create a family to get divorced. Anyway, so the document that we had to sign. So when you freeze sperm, you own it legally. So when I froze sperm, it was my sperm. But when you create embryos, you create them with your partner. So you legally own them together. And when you get divorced, part of your estate, because embryos aren't actually classified as people, they're classified as estate property. Part of that is you have to split them.
That has to be tough. That's actually tougher than you made it look. Oh, we had to have to take a moment.
And we're back.
And we're back.
Yeah. Sorry, that was... That hit me like a ton of bricks. I don't quite know why. Anyway, so when you freeze sperm, legally you freeze sperm. So when I froze mine, it was mine. When my ex froze his, it was his. But then when we created embryos with an egg donor, legally we both owned those embryos. So part of the divorce settlement was to split those, because if anything happened to me, he would have access to the embryos and vice versa. So a document that we had to sign was splitting them. So my embryos, the embryos made with the embryos made with my sperm came to me, and the embryos made with his sperm came to him. And I think that was a challenging moment for me, I think, as you've just...
And it has to be really tough. And
on that note, that's my daughter.
Lulu's calling.
Hold on. Hi, darling. Can I call you back? Sure. It's okay.
What?
Your favorite YouTuber is using IVF? Yeah. Oh, well, let's talk about that in a little bit. Can we talk about that in a bit, babe?
Okay, bye.
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 Sorry.
You never not answer to your kids.
Never. That will be the calls that I answer.
So, guide me through the process.
Well, the irony is signing the divorce papers was very easy. That wasn't traumatic at all because we were both on the same page with all of that. But I think the emotion around certain parts is hard.
The reason I'm asking for this question is because at the moment, if I ask you today, would you consider today having kids?
That's a really tough question. And I'll answer for two reasons. One, I can't really afford it because it's incredibly expensive to go through the surrogacy process. But two, I'm now 48.
Are you saying that you want sponsors? Sponsors. Do you want to sponsor a kid?
And the nanny and the clothing and everything that goes with it. And then the schooling and like all of that. It's not just going through the surrogacy and IVF process that's expensive.
But still, if anybody wants to make a GoFundMe page.
No, I think I'm now 48. I've lived all of the different parts with my children and I've loved every single one. They've all been challenging, but they've all been amazing. But I don't feel that I could go back to doing nappies and preschool. And I'm really enjoying the children as they are now. And I don't feel that I don't want to do that.
Okay. And your answer is valid. But then that follows up with, why was it so difficult, the embryo separation, and why did you decide to keep your embryos?
When you have embryos frozen, in America they can stay frozen for many years, 20, 30 years. But there will come a point when I have to decide what to do with them. Because if I die, those become part of my estate. Now, currently, they're left to you. So you can continue the genetics. But I think if
you're not going anywhere.
No. But there are three things you can do. You can donate them to someone else. As in to you or to another couple who need embryos, who for one reason or another can't create their own. You can discard them. So I could just throw them away. Or I could donate them to science. And what does that mean? That means that somebody in a lab would be able to use them to practice doing the embryo biopsies or whatever they need to do with it.
Almost like when you want to be an organ donor.
Correct. But I think organ donation is you're giving them to somebody else. You're not giving somebody to practice. I don't really know. I am an organ donor. So I don't know. But when I'm gone, then I'm gone. But with the embryos themselves, I mean, the reason I'm keeping them is twofold. One, I don't feel that I can discard them not for religious reasons, not because I think they're life, not because I think they will become anything.
Why do you feel like you can discard them?
Because they're still a part of me. So there's that. And two, I mean, we did do cord blood banking. So when the children were born, we took the blood from the umbilical cord, they spin it, and then they store the stem cells that are in the umbilical cord. So if whatever happens in the future, if we ever need that, say, for example, for leukemia, or there's an illness or a disease that my children get that can be solved from stem cells, we could potentially do that. There's also a part of me that if something happens to my children.
Ugh. There's this immense need to, as a parent, to always want to protect your children at all costs and never see them going through anything.
Right, exactly.
But it's also the most beautiful thing is when something happened to your children and you're there. That is the best bond of children, a child can have with their parents, is that when you need them, when something happened to you, and not wait until they're gone to be so protected. And when something happened to you, they're not there anymore. So there's a beautiful side on. Now, I'm not hoping for anything to happen to them, but there's this immense need to have your kids extremely protected. And you're doing a great job. I think you're one of the best dads I've ever seen. If I could only have a third of a dad of what you are. That's why you should make 100,000 more kids.
Yeah, if anyone wants to sponsor it. No, it's the most amazing thing I've ever done.
I didn't know British people have emotions.
I'm half South American.
Remember? Oh, there you go.
It's the Chilean side of me coming out. No, it is. It's really tough. But anybody going through this, there have been challenges. There's trauma. There is, no matter how amazing you paint the picture, because generally I'm an incredibly positive person. I see the good in everybody. I see there is always, people have it a lot worse. And then just sometimes it sucks. And that's okay.
Now I understand what you've been delaying for us to talk.
Yeah, he's been wanting to do this episode for months, and I just...
But it's just, I just think it's important for us to understand each other and for us to allow the audience to understand the reason why we're doing this and who we are. And it's not just me just coming up with this, as we've gotten messages and requests, and we have a beautiful small community of people that have been informed and people that have been relieved to have somebody to reveal the information, especially for me, the fact that I get people from South America. And yeah, I mean, I've joked with my girlfriends, it's like, if I don't get married at this age, you will be the father of my kids. But the fact that to see people really close to me and then disclosing, well, my first kid was through IVF, and or I only froze my eggs after I had a miscarriage.
Well, you saw, I mean, the biggest celebrity to go through this was Sofia Vergara, who with one of her ex-partners had embryos, and they had to go to court.
Oh,
and
wow.
There was a fight over the embryos. I mean, and that's the thing. This is why, you know, as kind of full circle back to the conference, day two, talking through contracts and clauses and what happens, you need to understand it all.
This is very, because if the conversation of a prenup is already traumatic, or it could be a toll in a marriage, like, why would I sign a prenup? Why would we get in divorce before we get married? Well, and then you have to go to like the seminar and you just have to talk about contracts, what happened if it's like, wow. It's like,
yeah, it is, but it is a wow. And you do that when you create the embryos as well. You sign consent forms as to what happens to the embryos in situation A, B, C, D, or E. But it's like you're in that happy mode. You're like, oh, this is great, da da da. But you always have to think downstream of what if. And I think that, for me, was really, like, I didn't really think about it until the clinic sent me a document saying, hey, you need to think this through, now you're divorced.
Oh, really? So if that's you working in the industry, what's there for people that have no clue and they're barely getting through the process? Like, wow.
It's not, but then that's coming back to that positivity angle, right? Like, I will always look at the bright side. I will always be the glass half full kind of guy, because that's who I am. But I think every so often there's a moment when the glass is empty. and you've got to figure out how to replenish it. And I think with the people around you, with professionals around you who can take the emotion out of it, that just helps. Because for them, it's like, hey, you need to think this through. For me, that obviously triggered a lot more. But, you know, you got done, and it's done and dusted now, so it's fine.
Wow. That was good information. Thank you. And I think we're going to leave this episode here, and we will come back and continue with more of the personal aspect of where we stand and what is our next step in IVF studies, and how are we going to continue to provide information of small details like this that going through or will go through at some point. And there's no manual for it, so...
Well, there is. I have wrote a book on it.
Oh, yes, there is a book. But I think the more that we talk about these experiences, the better it's going to be for people to understand. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This has been a pleasure. And stay tuned for more on IVF Daddies. And listen to your podcast, whatever you listen to your podcast. And follow us on social media at IVF Daddies and all the
platforms.
And all the platforms.